When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Are the old world picturesque shores of Europe calling you? Set sail on an adventure with Avalon Waterways. Enjoy an elevated cruising experience. Avalon Waterways offers smaller ships, bigger experiences with fewer people and more of, well, everything good about river cruising. Don't just dream about quaint towns and cobblestone villages. See them for yourself and make lasting memories. Discover limited time offers today at AvalonWaterways.com.
This crowd rises to its feet. Vaccaro slammed it home. Garland left wing, three ball. Perfect. Garland in front of the lane, locked. The Mobley, pow. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim. Pow with the left hand and a foul.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Support for this podcast is brought to you by Fubo TV. Watch over 100 channels of live sports and TV for half the cost of cable. There's no contract and no commitment. Try for free at FuboTV.com. The Cleveland Cavaliers are once again streaking, just not in the direction we'd like to see. But
turn around.
But Darius Garland appears to have broken out of his slump in a very big way, scoring 51 points, a career high against the Minnesota Timberwolves, and joining me to discuss the losing streak, Garland's career night, and a whole lot more is my co-host Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing all right, Justin. You know, as good as one can do in the midst of a four-game losing streak. At least this one was on normal time zone, you know. I'm feeling positive. I'll shout out a couple things. I thought the court and the jerseys looked freaking awesome.
Oh, God, did they ever. Honestly,
I was just, you know, when that first leak came out, I was not a fan at all. It's just such a lesson in, like, you got to see these things in context. You can't see, like, a grainy PNG. Yeah. Like, you got to see it. I didn't think the C would pop, the little blue C. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure about that. And seeing the texture of it really, really pops visually. I thought the court looked awesome. And remember, Justin, when the brand refresh was going on, I was like, give me some baby blues.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize until I saw the court reveal just how, you know, how deep into the baby blue they'd be going.
Yeah. And a lot of the merch looks awesome, too. I'm definitely going to be collecting some of that.
Give me the warmups, Justin. I will lounge in that sweatsuit all day, every day.
Well, you'll be surprised to hear I was more interested in the snapback that I was undoubtedly going to wear backwards. But we should also start with just an apology that we weren't able to get the audio version of our last podcast up for a couple days. It was a little delayed. It aged really well. And I hate that it aged well because we did point out, hey, you know, the Kings game is going to be another third game in four nights. The Cavs aren't going to be rested on this trip. Going back home against Minnesota, that's going to be the first game back after a long road trip. Historically, that's always a difficult game. I was hoping that there would be difficulties, but that we would get some wins. And it's really disappointing, obviously, to be now stuck on a four-game losing streak. Because you look at the eight-game winning streak and the four-game losing streak, we'd feel a whole lot better if it was like two wins and a loss, two wins and a loss.
Two on, one off.
That would feel a whole lot better. But instead, you ride incredibly high. And then you have this stretch where a lot of, I think why it's so frustrating beyond the fact that we were all tired watching last week's games, staying up real late to see close losses, is because those losses were so close, you can kind of hyper focus on a couple things that could have gone differently and got you a different result. I know beyond just the kind of the rest issue and the fact that they were playing on the West Coast right after a time change, which is brutal, by the way. Like that Clippers game, the players' bodies are on 11:30 p.m. Like that's what the time their bodies are on with that game being right after the time change. Obviously, it's frustrating. But even looking at Darius Garland, who was under the weather last week, if he had like a B minus or even a C plus game against the Kings or the Warriors, those results are probably a little bit different.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at their schedule. And their losses so far this year: lost the Raptors by 3, lost the Clippers by 2, lost the Kings by 7, lost the Warriors by 5, lost the Wolves by 5. You know, this is not the Cavs of yore getting beaten by, you know, beating the brakes off of them and losing by 20. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it sucks to lose. You know, I do think, I don't know what to make of that T-Wolves game. You know, I thought against the Clippers and the Kings, the Cavs played bad basketball.
Yeah.
I thought against the Warriors, they played pretty good basketball. And
agreed.
The Warriors just Warriors them at the Chase Center, which, you know, it's going to happen. And then, you know, the T-Wolves, so many guys are out. Lamar starting. Like, it was such a weird game that it's hard to be, like, grumpy that they fell behind as much as they did. And, you know, so I lean towards just feeling like, okay, we're back on the upswing, though. You get a reality. It's not like it gets any easier. You're heading to Milwaukee next.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of games, like even looking at the upcoming schedule, the next 2 weekends, we are going to have 3-game and 4-night stretches again, with the third game coming against the Hawks, another one coming against the Raptors. Like, they're going to have to navigate some tired legs and just, you know, heavy arms in a lot of these games, and learning to navigate through that kind of adversity is going to be really important, because they are going to be at a rest deficit. You are going to have to try to get right against probably the best player in the NBA in Giannis, but you should have some level of confidence. And honestly, I'm still feeling pretty confident going into that game, because I don't think there's been nothing I've seen from this season that makes me feel like the Cavs don't have enough to win any game that they play. Getting Darius on the right track is super important. And really, when you look at it, those two games were real outliers. Like, he comes back against Boston 29-12, 24-7 against the Lakers, 19-12 against the Clippers. Obviously frustrating that there were a couple mistakes at the end of that game. One of them should have been called a foul rather than a turnover. We don't need to rehash that. The 6-point game against the Kings, and honestly, even his 15-2 game against the Warriors. Those are the outliers. And then obviously bouncing back to 51-6. If Donovan Mitchell and Jared Allen are back on Wednesday against the Bucks, I feel pretty good about their chances of going in there and stealing a game on the road.
Yeah, I mean, I think what they have shown, even the most pessimistic fans, and buddy, there are a lot of them right now. I really got to get off Twitter. Gotta get off Twitter. Geez, it's like none of y'all never had any success in your life, the way you're handling a slight dip. But, you know, I think that, like, what we have seen, even to the pessimistiest pessimists, is that this team hangs with everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, the Wolves game is the only game where they've fallen behind 20, as far as I can remember, all season.
Yeah,
absolutely. I don't know if that's actually a stat, but it my mind tells me that's the stat.
I think so. I think that, like, the Boston deficit only got to about 16, right? Like, that was objectively their worst quarter of the season, and it makes sense, right? Like, you're starting off with Allen and Mitchell out of the lineup. Lamar Stevens had a good game in kind of his first real run with the team. I was overall happy with him, but it makes sense that there would be some miscommunications to start that game. And honestly, like, I do understand some level of pessimism, because when you have, we all come into a season with preconceived notions, right? And we're looking for any bits of data that are going to back that up. So when you have the Kings game and you have Harrison Barnes and some of these other wings hitting threes, that's going to lead to people going, well, you know, I've been sane. The Cavs need another wing. This is confirming how I feel about it. And for me, who's, you know, falls on the optimistic side of things, I'll go, yeah, but they did a really good job making Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown work. They did a very good job on Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan. Like,
I'll tell you what, if people are going to get worked up over a person who averages 28 a game scoring 28 on the Cavs, I just don't know what to tell you, bro. Like that, you're just looking to make it hard, like against right. star players. And I think they did do that in both those games. I don't know. I don't like losing either. Mm-hmm. I've been grumpy after the losses and frustrated at certain things. But it's like, brother, like, what do you expect? Do you think if we had, you know, one of your defensive heroes on the wing that the Cavs would just stop giving up points? Like,
yeah.
They're a top five defense, or at least they were before heading into last night. Like, people are just, I think, out of their minds, man. It's driving me crazy.
Yeah,
I just feel like this is not to me. This is a hard podcast, Justin, because to me, this is not the time for takes. This is just the time. Like to me, it is the time to just like ride it out, see what we can learn. Like, yeah, they had a couple bad games in a row. They had a couple decent, better ones where they still lost. But like, I just feel like you're out of your mind if you're just drawing big conclusions right now.
Yeah, I think big conclusions. I'll agree there. I do think that there are interesting takes from this.
There's stuff to analyze.
Without a doubt. And let's be clear. Both of us would love the Cavs have an open roster spot. I would love to have another wing that you feel good about throwing in the rotation. If Dean Wade is going to be out for a while with knee soreness, we definitely are short wings because Dean Wade is such a crucial part of how they defended Tatum, how they defended the wings in Chicago and their early season success. And I think the fact that he was laboring through a knee issue against Sacramento and had to be shut down after that makes sense because I felt like that was his weakest defensive game where he really did struggle.
Was starting with his hands a lot.
Yeah, he was really working with his hands. It looked a lot like Caris LeVert even, because Caris can get a little bit handsy on the defensive end, and Dean was looking the same way in that game. I do think it's worth noting, while we're on the subject of defense, Bowser to Bowser on Twitter, who is a writer for Peachtree Hoops, has noted that over the last four games, Cavs opponents have made 48% of their contested threes, which is 50% higher than league average. Minnesota made 8 of their 15 contested threes against the Cavs. I found that to be an interesting stat. I did go and rewatch after seeing that tweet, the makes for Minnesota, and there were some late contests there for sure. What jumps out to me is a lot of those D-low pick and roll coverages. They would go under and kind of contest from the other side rather than putting the pressure on and hedging and making it uncomfortable for them. But still, that's one of those indicators where opponents are shooting better on contested threes than Steph Curry shoots on uncontested threes. That's one of those kind of small sample size things. And it's unfortunate that aligns with kind of a slump for Darius Garland, like a two-game slump from Garland, a bad game for Mobley against the Wolves, right? Like, it's kind of one of those if it rains, it pours situations. But ultimately, like, whether you want to call it context, whether you want to call it excuses, whichever direction you fall there, it's still kind of informative if you're trying to look at, okay, what's unsustainable about this? Just the way we look at positive runs, right? When they have a positive streak, okay, what's sustainable, what's not? That's something that you expect to come back to earth at some point in the near future.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely agree. And, you know, I am glad that we didn't just, you know, that you didn't just drink the Kool-Aid, because I do think the defensive effort, like sometimes when you let a team hit two or three open threes to start the game, the contested threes get a little bit easier.
Exactly.
You know, so like, and I think the Cavs have certainly been guilty of that in some games, and, you know, their fundamentals have been so-so.
Like Rolo jumping out for a late contest on Cat. That's one of the best shooting big men of all time. Like D'Lo in a rhythm, you can't the let best, him get that spin. Right? Like, often the best defense comes prior to the shot attempt, right? And making players uncomfortable. So I thought that the Cavs could have done a better job of that against the Wolves. And I think they could have done a better job of that across this losing streak in general. But I do think it is still worth noting, right? And from a fan perspective, I know it feels like we're giving up a lot more uncontested shots than we even are, because when you have those contested shots go down, you have a couple late contests. All of a sudden, when you get the wide open one that drops, it feels so much more exasperating, especially when you're trying to make a push in the fourth quarter or whatever the case may be. That becomes so frustrating because it's like, okay, well, that's like their 12th make on the night. It's going to, like, you're not thinking about it in the moment as, okay, well, 70% of them have been contested and they've shot well on that, but then now they're hitting these uncontested ones. Those uncontested ones just sting so much more. But even with that, all of these games are winnable. If Garland plays better, if they hit their free throws against Minnesota, that was a really frustrating
69% in that game.
Not nice at all. 27 to 39. Like it was, there's so many things to be frustrated with, but also things that don't seem to project like long-term concerns in my mind. And to me, the biggest thing and one of my biggest frustrations is we still just haven't had a lot of time of this starting lineup working together. Like that's one of the main things we want to analyze. And they didn't get to play together in the preseason. And for various reasons, we haven't got a lot of time of them together in the regular season.
And the time hasn't been that good, so he can't keep them out there. You know? So I do think it's interesting. You know, it feels like JB is starting to get asked some of those questions about that unit. It hasn't been performing quite as well as you would hope. You know, I don't think, even though Karras is shooting pretty well, I don't think he's got the gravity.
That you would
hope for. Mobley's jumper has regressed a little bit this season, at least, you know, by the percentages.
That's one of those weird things where I feel like he's getting a little more adventurous with the attempts he will take. Like there's more variety of the shot attempts that he's attempting from like mid-range, so it definitely has regressed from percentages, but I do feel like the shooting form looks a little better to my eyes.
Maybe. I don't know. Either way, that lineup hasn't really done it quite yet. And yet, you know, you have the stats ready to go. The second best net rating in the league still.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like the key to predictable long-term success, it has pretty much been borne out, is if you're outscoring your opponents a lot in wins, and when you lose, you don't lose by that much.
Yep.
I mean, that is the definition of the Cavs this season. Mm-hmm. Still number two net in the league, number four defense, number three offense, number one overall point differential. For anyone who thinks that they suck to close games because they had four bad ones in a row, their second and fourth quarter net rating. Because, by the way, they also had a bunch of really, really good ones. Actually, yep. Almost impossibly good ones. So, like, I think that this is still a very, very good team, mm-hmm. whose slight downswing got coincided with a West Coast trip and a couple guys getting dinged up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely frustrating, but those indicators are still really positive. And the one you left out, fourth and third quarter net rating. Like, I feel like the adjustments in the second half have been really good. And like even against Minnesota, I thought it was really interesting because first possession, you have a pick and pop with Garland and Kevin Love. That forces, because they blew the coverage and left Love wide open, all of a sudden Minnesota goes to a switching defense. From there, Karl Anthony Towns gets in foul trouble. So as a result of that, they go into drop. As soon as they go into drop, Darius Garland just completely torches them, right? Like that is not something you ever want to do against the Cavs when they have Garland and Mitchell, but Garland alone was enough to really kind of expose that defense. And it obviously was frustrating at the end. Karl Anthony Towns gets the tip out for an offensive rebound, Kevin Love turnover, but it's nice to see that they're continuing to, you know, fight in all of these games. That would have been a very easy one to write off. Our guy, Carter. Our guy, Haul, finally got into the lineup and had one of the harshest plus minuses I've ever seen in 5 minutes. Minus 17 in 5 minutes. I feel bad for my guy there.
Yeah, that's just bad. That's bad luck. That's bad something. I don't know, man. Yeah. That means they just hit every single shot and you missed every single shot.
Yeah, I think there were a couple of the D'Lo contested ones in that stretch. Yeah, and the interesting thing that I found was looking at offensive rating in wins versus losses. The Cavs actually have the identical offensive rating in wins and losses. They actually have the best net rating in losses, which you would expect, given the team has the best point differential and hasn't had any blowout losses. But it's really been the defense that in games that they lose, all of a sudden that defensive rating drops down to 26 in losses. while the offense has still been really good, and that's been what's kept them in a lot of these games. So there's definitely been some encouraging signs that you feel like this is going to turn around. But like you said, it's not going to get any easier as you take on Giannis and the Bucks on Wednesday.
Yeah, and just, man, it is going to be a really, really rough matchup. I mean, I feel like the Bucks are playing really, really good basketball right now.
I'm going to push back a little bit because they've had their guys out for the last few games, like Giannis, Middleton,
and when they play, they're playing really good basketball.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying they haven't played any.
And I feel like that stretch, even that stretch, is exposing that Javon Carter might be a real player for them.
Yeah,
Marjon really Beauchamp good. Might be a real player for them. Like, now I'm not saying he's there yet, but he's showing some legitimate flashes. Mm-hmm. He hit a nasty step back tonight against Atlanta, off the bounce from three. So like, I just think that team is the class of the league right now. And man, if they get talk about a vibes cure all, mm-hmm. going to Milwaukee and beating the Bucks would be a great salve for some grumpy fans.
It absolutely would be. The Bucks, I completely agree. They are the class of the league, just like Zoom is the class of video conferencing. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. Carter, we haven't spent enough time on Darius Garland's 51.
No, we haven't. Let's talk about it.
That was incredible. And Like I said, he's put up some really good stat lines this year already. Like, I think the slump, just the timing of it, makes everyone feel like, oh man, like maybe the time that he missed really kind of threw him for a loop and all that. No, he clearly was under the weather. That didn't look anything like the Darius Garland we saw against Boston, the Lakers, or the Clippers. And this game against the Wolves gives me a lot of confidence. When I talk about confidence going into the Bucks game, if Mitchell and Allen are playing and Garland is confident and himself again, they're going to have enough firepower to go toe-to-toe with the Bucks. And
well,
you would think, especially with Middleton likely out in that matchup, that the Cavs do have the interior personnel to kind of make things difficult for Giannis. We saw that in the game against them last year. And I feel good about it. Like, at the end of the day, I'm going to feel good about the Cavs when they're healthy because their backcourt and their big man pairing are two of the best in the league at both of those positions.
Yeah. I mean, Darius in this game really found his way, you know? I mean, I think he really showed that, you know, the volume 3-point shooting, the aggressiveness. I mean, to take 13 threes. I mean, imagine that 2 years ago, us just begging this guy to shoot more. You know, and I tweeted it after the game, and I feel like I got some pushback. I was like, you know, I never really thought about this guy as the kind of guy who would go drop a 50 burger in a game. You know, he's so unselfish. That's not his style to dominate possessions like that. And he just did. You know, he clawed them back into the game. I hope he found something. You know, I feel like the volume 3-point shooting is kind of the cure-all for him. I think the finishing at the rim last year was really, really good. I don't know if it's always going to be that good. And even in this game, he was six for 16 from 2-point range. I just happened to go 10 of 13 from 3, which is banana pancakes. but yeah, I mean, I think that volume 3-point shooting is how small guards stay efficient no matter what.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that I hope that this was a nice little, you know, warm up for him after having been, you know, pretty off, I think, so far in this season. I know that Bucks game was great. I didn't think the Lakers game was so good. And the Clippers game, he really forced it down the stretch. So I think it was a super, super encouraging game for him. And just like, man, you know, when he's cooking and when Donnie's cooking, they have so much firepower. And you brought up the Bucks matchup. This is one of those go prove it matchups for this backcourt. Obviously, I'm hoping that Donnie is able to play in this one because, you know, the Bucks basically they have a defensive philosophy, right? Mm-hmm. They say, listen, we've got two enormous people in the front court. Hi, Cavs. You might understand that. but our backcourt is Javon Carter and Drew Holiday. and we are maniacs. We are crazy people who will fight, scratch, claw, get skinny, truck you, get through the screen, any which way we can to stay connected while our big plays in a drop. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to, so we're not going to give you a man advantage defensively. You have to beat our shell defense. You have to set good screens, and your ball handlers have to attack off of those screens, and they have to generate good angles. And man, this, I mean, if there's ever a game for the backcourt to kind of go prove it, it's this one. And also a game for Mobley and Allen to say, let to kind of show that they can be just as physical as a very, very physical Bucks team with the kind of screens they're setting. Because you can't, you're not going to go screen Drew Holiday. And if you try to slip that with him and drop, you don't gain an advantage. Yeah. So, you know, obviously Kevin, that's a little bit of a different scenario because Kevin can slip out to a 3-point shot that Brooke might not want to go chase. But, you know, it's not going to be easy to generate clean looks in this game. They're not going to let you cook it and swing it around the perimeter. You're going to be playing 2-on-2 a lot, and your 2 is going to have to be better than their 2.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I do think the volume 3-point shooting from Garland and Mitchell, assuming they're both playing, is going to be important. Like, honestly, that to me was the biggest indicator that Garland wasn't himself those two games. Because if you had to guess, Carter, how many 3-point attempts outside of the Sacramento and Golden State game where he averaged 4.5 per game, outside of that, out of the games Garland's actually completed, how many 3-point attempts do you think he's taken a game?
6, 7?
He's taking 11 per game. I may have asked.
No, he's
that.
Not
in those games. I'm saying,
oh, that's crazy.
Excluding those, because he took 11 against Boston. He took 9 against the Lakers, 9 against the Clippers, and 15 against the Wolves. So over those 4 games, he's taken 11 a game. And in the Sacramento and Golden State games, 4.5 attempts. Like, to me, that's clearly an indication that something wasn't right beyond just, you know, missing a couple of them. Because it's not like he shot great against the Lakers and Clippers. He took 3 of 9 and 2 of 9, but he was getting them up. So to get him back on track, I think is really important. I do apologize. I think the football game is still very much on my voice tonight. Bombers going
we're
to the Grey Cup.
We're in the Grey Cup, yeah?
Bombers going to the Grey Cup once again, and they're going against Toronto, Carter.
Oh, man, this is not good for you.
This is not good for my...
You're going to be insufferable.
Yeah, I'm going to be foaming at the mouth on Sunday. There's no denying that.
This is going to be a problem.
One thing I'll note, though, I think one of the real lessons from this losing streak is, and I know we've hammered on this before, but I really think it's important. The Cavs need to get into their sets quicker. Just too frequently, we're seeing them...
In the fourth quarter, specifically.
Yeah, especially in the fourth quarter. I looked it up to see if the pace decreased in the fourth quarter. It hasn't, and I think some of that is, you know, when you're behind, you're pushing the pace. The Minnesota game, for sure, they're actually higher in pace in the fourth quarter of losses than wins, which is one of those kind of weird small sample size things. But to me, it's not necessarily about getting out and running. It's running the sets earlier, because when you only have 7-8 seconds left on the shot clock, one of the biggest things is you're not going to get your big men involved. Like, that ball is not going to go to Evan Mobley or Jared Allen on those possessions. And that makes it a lot easier to defend you. If it's just Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell using one screen and then trying to generate a shot off a defender, what makes the Cavs special and what's made their offense so effective overall in the season is by getting Mobley involved, by getting Allen involved, the split cuts, the actions, all... When you get Mobley the ball, all of a sudden you're able to run both Garland and Mitchell off ball and generate movement, breakdowns in the defense, engaging more defenders. That type of engagement is what opens up a mistake for Jared Allen to get an opportunity in the dunker spot, or for a cutter to get to the basket, whether it's Karis or Donovan. That kind of action is so important. And when you start your possession so late in the shot clock, there is no opportunity for anybody other than the ball handler, pretty much, to get a shot attempt up. And that makes you so much easier to defend. And I really do think that the failure to get Mobley and other guys touches in those last couple minutes and get those opportunities earlier in the shot clock has made them a lot easier to defend. And I think that's been part of why they've lost these games.
Yeah, and why, you know, Boston was able to force overtime after the Cavs had taken control, yep. Why Washington was able to force overtime after the Cavs had taken control. And it's not just starting the sets, it's committing to them like you do in the first quarter. I mean, yes. Like, it's not just the plays are starting too late. These guys are going 75%. I don't know if it's tired legs. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's the extra physicality of the late game where guys are getting bumped off their spots as they're getting ready to set some of those pin downs and run some of those split cuts. But, like, they're not at 100% in these recent losses in the fourth quarter. So I really do hope that JB's kind of seeing not only the pace, but like the kind of the verve with which they're running their stuff. Like, if there's one thing that you have to give the Warriors credit for is, like, they don't half run through anything.
Yeah.
Like, all their sets, like, late in that game were just as crisp as they were in the first quarter. And like, I think that's the kind of lesson this team needs to take, because listen, if you run some stuff against a locked in defense, half the time it's not going to work,
mm-hmm.
but you know, and that's okay. And then you can run a high pick and roll with Donnie, like that, you know, might yield something. Like, but if that's your first set without attacking off an advantage, it's just going to be really hard, especially when you already have tired legs. So I couldn't agree more. Also, just the
law of probabilities. Like, if you get to run two sets in a possession, odds are probably higher that one of them is going to work versus just having one. And honestly, this is on Darius and this is on Donovan more than anybody. They are the floor generals out there. They are the ones that need to dictate the pace. They are the ones that need to make sure that they're getting into their sets, because this is in football where every single play is called in from the sideline, right? Like, it is on Darius and Donovan to increase the pace, get them into their sets quicker. And honestly, that's the learning curve, right? Like, that is something that we want Darius to develop into. It's one of those reminders that he's 22 years old. It's understandable that when a game's tight late, you have the lead, you're trying to milk the clock and everything. But honestly, like, it's not that dramatic of a difference if you're getting into a set with 14 seconds left on the shot clock versus 7 in terms of, like, game time burned. But it makes a really big difference when it comes to the number of stuff that you can run in a given possession.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many times I need to see Steve Jones talk about the Cavs going to the prevent offense.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think ultimately, I hope they learn that lesson. Obviously, it's not killed them yet, so I'm not surprised they haven't made huge changes to their fourth quarter strategy. Again, they have the second best fourth quarter net rating in the league. Last night probably helped with that just a smidge. But you know, like, I hope they're looking at their process, not just their results, and seeing that, like, oh, this is actually a lot harder than it needs to be right now. Like, we're going through extended cold stretches when teams lock in on us because we're not running our stuff nearly as much.
And some of it might be that, you know, there's still a learning curve for Garland and Mitchell together, right? Like, to when it's not second nature of how you're going to play off of one another and you're still getting comfortable, it's understandable that in really kind of pressure filled moments that you kind of, your decision making's just a half step slower. You're a little more indecisive. Am I going to give this up to Donnie? Am I going to take it myself? Right? Like, it's understandable that they would have those issues, but I really do think maintaining that kind of purpose that you play with offensively is so important, because they aren't playing quick. Like, they are 25th in pace. They are slower overall in wins versus losses. But you know, like, that's not necessarily, like, as much as I want to see this team get out and run, and they certainly can go do that, off of stops. The most important thing to me is just getting into the sets quickly, playing with a purpose and taking advantage of that, because to me, that jumps out. And the other thing that jumps out is they haven't been great in transition defense. That, to me, that's the one kind of weak spot right now when it comes to the Cavs overall defense. They give up the fourth most transition opportunities in the league, and they are 16th when it comes to transition defense, 48th percentile in transition defense. Those transition opportunities, you're going to give up fewer of them if you're more efficient on the offensive end, if you're a little more decisive, because the late game turnovers and the fact that teams have been able to get out and run off of those opportunities has been one of those kind of contributing causes when you look at this 4-game losing streak.
See, to me, I think the transition defense, that is a bit of a problem. It's been a, you know, like, they do. I think it's just because they play big and then they often have a wing parked in the corner. I think sometimes it's hard for them to get back.
Yep. It was an issue at the start of last season, and then eventually they shored it up.
Yeah, to me, I think the biggest thing that's holding this defense back from being like truly, I mean, again, they're top five defense right now, yeah. But I think the thing that's keeping them from being like truly unbeatable is their foul rate, man. Yeah. Last year, they were fifth in the league in opponent free throw attempts per game, and I think per 100 possessions.
Yeah.
Right now, they're 25th. Per 36 minutes, Isaac Okoro is averaging 4.6 fouls. Lamar, 4.1. Dean, 4. Chetty, 3.6. Robin, 3.3. Evan, 3.3. Like, that is like 6-7 rotation players averaging 3 fouls a game plus.
Yeah, that's like that's a lot. I did see
you are giving up free points. Then they can't play physical. They either Jared or Evan gets in foul trouble. Then they have to completely sacrifice their twin tower defensive identity, and then they don't play nearly as physically. So and how many of these fourth quarter collapses have featured over the backs that lead to two free throws for the other team because they're in the bonus with 9 minutes left.
Yeah.
So I think the free throw rate is actually the number one thing that is holding them back defensively. I'm not worried about the 3-point defense. I'm really not. I think I'm not worried about wing scoring. I'm worried about stop fouling, guys.
I think that's fair. I definitely think there's room for improvement there. I was going to go this podcast without talking about officiating. Not every team gets to throw a flying shoulder check in important moments, Carter, you know?
Not every team.
I'm still a little bit bitter about that Clay play.
We talked about it. Well, we can too. Why not?
Yeah, I'm going to complain.
We're just company men.
Yeah, whenever I feel like it, I'm going to complain, especially with refs. And it's funny because I did see a tweet that there's more inexperienced officials and younger officials. There's definitely been some turnover there. So I don't know if maybe they're calling what looks like fouls, because it's weird to see Mobley pick up as many fouls as he has just because he is so disciplined and he does go vertical. And I feel like there's been some inconsistencies with how that's called. But at the same time, the stuff that you pointed out is very valid. Like boxing out, getting proper position so you're not going over the back, being a little more disciplined, understanding when you have the opportunity to make a play on a rebound or a steal versus, you know, reaching in it and really gambling. Like,
you don't got to swipe with this team. Yeah. You don't got to swipe the ball. You just don't. Like, you know who's allowed to swipe? Donovan Mitchell. Like, everyone else, just put your hands out wide when you're guarding against the drive and your hands up in the air when they're about to shoot. And 9 times out of 10, you're going to be all A-okay.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I think it's overall, it's a very good observation. And the other thing that my kind of takeaway from these games, and I was really happy to see Okoro have a good game against the Wolves. I thought that was probably his best game of the season. Played very well defensively.
I hope hitting that three is, gets the juices flowing for our boy.
Yeah, because I was talking to Kolb on Twitter, who was kind of like questioning, hey, is it worth it basically to try to get Okoro back on track? Like, and my answer is absolutely yes, because it's not like this is 2015 where, hey, we got to contend this year, otherwise LeBron has a free agency option at the end of the year, right? Like, learning what we have with all these guys is still one of the most important priorities, because if you're talking about going out and adding a wing, whether it's in free agency, on the trade market, etc., you're always going to be paying a premium in those situations. So to figure out if you can get Isaac back on track to me is really important. It was encouraging to see Lamar play well. The one note I have, so the pace thing and getting into the sets, to me, that's a Garland and Mitchell thing. The one change I would like to see from JB is just a little more consistency when it comes to the rotation, because especially like kind of the 5 minute spurts that we've seen like Okoro have at times this year, where, you know, he plays for 5 minutes. If those 5 minutes don't go well, he might not see the floor again. I would like to see just a little more consistency, at least for the first three quarters with the rotation, where you kind of know, okay, I'm going to get multiple appearances. There's a little more consistency in what the role is going to be, just so that there isn't the kind of feeling that you need to go out and press and earn more minutes within the game. Fourth quarter, absolutely. You can shorten the rotation, go with what works, go with the hot hand. But I just think having a little more consistency would help some of these role players, not just Okoro, like Jetty's struggled a little bit recently as well. Get those guys on track, because I do think ultimately getting a little bit more out of the supporting players would really pay dividends for this team.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is something to, I mean, JB is running a short rotation right now. It's not that, you know, I'm not super worried that Donovan Mitchell is playing a lot of minutes, not super worried that Darius is playing a ton of minutes, but the whole all five starters playing a ton of minutes, you know, that I'm like, hey, we can probably, you know, and maybe he's just coaching to the result, you know, like when it is hard if you're JB to go put Neto in for another shift when you're minus 17 in his 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And part of me wonders if that's part of the reason why the team hasn't lost, hasn't had many blowouts, because JB has been quick to right the ship.
Yep.
So, you know, like we might be getting, you know, maybe there's a degree we should be careful what we wish for here, you know, like,
no, I understand.
I also am aligned with your take. Nevertheless, like devil's advocate here, but like I do agree that like over the long haul, even if you do have a couple just really ugly games for a guy like Howell Neto, a guy like Isaac Okoro, and God knows Jetty's had his fair share as well, like knowing that they're going to have some time to get comfy on the floor might, you know, bear itself out over time.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think I'm pretty aligned with that one.
Yeah. And we also have to factor in, like, we don't know they're seeing at practice. We don't know what's being asked of them. So if something was dictated to a player that, hey, we really want you to emphasize this when you're out there on the court, and they do the complete opposite in their shift, I can understand where that's a situation where maybe you pull the guy and you make an example out of that. Like, we don't understand everything that's going into it. The other thing I'll note as well when it comes to the minutes overall, I was listening to the Hoop Collective today, and Arnovitz had pointed out that there's 27 players in the league right now averaging over 35 minutes per game, which is the most since the 13-14 season. And you look at some of these games, like, it's harder to sit some of your starters if Paul George is out there playing 39 minutes against you, right? Like, if the opposing stars are going to be on the court a long time, you're going to, like, the temptation is there to put your stars out there and match minute for minute. And especially in a season where we finally had a normal offseason, we have a reduced travel and reduced kind of back-to-back season, right, where guys are going to get more rest throughout the season, that's going to make teams feel a little bit more comfortable about giving guys minutes. And out of those 27 players that are averaging over 35 minutes, the only one on the Cavs that is Donovan Mitchell, obviously skewed a little bit with those three OT games. But Garland, Mobley, LeVert, all those other guys, they're below that 35-minute mark. And, you know, if they're at 34, 35, I can live with that. To me, the, like,
you're quibbling over 2 minutes.
Yeah.
At a certain point, you know,
it doesn't make a huge, huge difference, right, in the long run. And in terms of total minutes, the Cavs are lower because they have had the opportunity to give Mitchell some rest on some.
Yeah, I went ahead and pulled that up because Mitchell's missed a couple games and Darius has missed a decent amount.
It's just Karis, right?
Karis is at 19 overall. You get down to Mobley at 26 and then Donnie at 35.
Yeah.
So, like, you do have three players on the top 40. So, you know, like, that's not, like, awesome. Mm-hmm. But, like, also the Cavs, I do think there is a degree of, like, it's just going to happen with this team because you have four core members of your team that are, like, all-star level or, you know, aspiring all-star level players. Yeah, those guys are going to get a lot of minutes, which does make it really hard to construct a nine-man rotation where a lot of people are getting minutes. Maybe JB's just going to play eight, and, you know, the three dudes off the bench just also get 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and those three might just change. I don't know. It's an interesting kind of conundrum because we've never really had to analyze a team that had four dudes that were on most nights. It's pretty easy to make the argument to put him out there for 35 minutes.
Yeah. On a lot of nights, they're the best player at their position, right? Like, it's, and maybe some of it's going to come down to, hey, the starting lineup needs to play a little bit better. Garland and Mitchell need to play better together, right? Like, especially when
you know, a good way to get your bench players minutes is in the game before the fourth quarter.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like if that lineup plays a little bit better and you protect the leads and you have a larger lead, you're going to be able to go deeper into your rotation. Right. And especially when the bench has been one of the better benches in the league. But to me, it's more when I'm talking about like whether it's getting Okoro more consistent minutes, it's just not to have as quick of a hook in game, because I just think it creates a situation where you're going to see him press. Because as much as Okoro has had struggles offensively, it has not been to this extent. Like to me, this is his worst stretch of offensive basketball that I've seen. I'm hopeful that the Minnesota game is a step in the right direction. Even in the preseason, like part of the reason why we had optimism with Okoro was how good he looked in the preseason. Like he was willing to take shots, and I don't know what happened in the first couple games, but these slumps can happen. And I think maybe
these are human beings, man.
Yeah,
the human brain is a wild thing.
Yeah, and he's still the second youngest guy on the team, right next to Mobley, right? So I just think it's worth exploring. And I know you made this point before, and I think it's a really smart one. Until Ricky's back, like I just think giving Okoro those opportunities makes a lot of sense, because we need to figure out exactly what we have to make informed decisions when it comes to team building moving forward.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess I get the argument for more Lamar, and boy, did he earn some minutes last night, you know, putting up 15 in his 30 minutes as a starter. And
especially if Wade is out, right?
Especially if Wade is out. When the team is fully healthy, you know, I think the other kind of reason to play Okoro is that I don't think Lamar does a very good job on smaller guards.
Agreed.
Okoro does a great job. So there are legitimate matchup reasons, but like, I get the argument. If you are of the belief that, you know, like Lamar gives you a better chance to win right now, I'm not going to like call you a fool for saying he should play, but I would agree that I would keep Okoro in the rotation until, you know, Ricky comes back. And then all of a sudden you got Ricky and Kevin and Jetty starting to eat a lot of those bench minutes. And then it starts to get a little bit, and Dean, of course.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, you know, just, you know, there's your 9-man rotation right there, and Isaac might not fit in it unless, things turn around a bit for him offensively. But I'm just not in any rush to do it right now.
Yeah, I completely agree. Hopefully Dean will be back soon. I mean, he was an important contributor, right? Like when we talk about, hey, the Cavs actually have done a good job defensively on wings and made guys work, like Dean Wade is such an important part of that. And I definitely think while he's out, Lamar getting him in the rotation makes sense. Like that's a big part of why
always
you have Lamar,
ready,
right?
Mr. Stevens.
Yeah. And
always ready.
He does as you said, he does a good job on forwards. Typically, I think once it gets onto guards, he can be a little prone to kind of those reach and fouls. He gives up a lot of and one jumpers in those situations. And it's just a different defensive skill set than what Okoro brings to the table. Dean, knee soreness. Hopefully that's not something long-term. I did think it was interesting. JB mentioned that Allen has been dealing with ankle soreness this season. That probably explains a little bit of his issues finishing at the rim if he's been dealing with some soreness there.
This man gets hit so much, man. If he were not the nicest player in the NBA, he would be barking at officials nonstop, because he is just... Like, I don't know if refs notice how often he gets knocked so hard that his hands are at his ankles.
Yeah.
He's trying to catch himself from being knocked over.
It's one of my biggest gripes. Like, I don't understand. Like, I've heard arguments, like even on the Paul George one that was ruled that it was a foul after the fact, that, you know, if he goes up two hands stronger, the contact's going to be a little bit more obvious than going the one-handed dunk with the other arm out. Like, I don't understand the amount of contact. Like, if I'm the Cavs, I'm sending a video to the league of just him getting bugged. Like, even in the Toronto game, where they ripped the ball out of his hands and it was four guys on him, it's like, not every single one of those four players could be grabbing the ball. Like, he gets absolutely mugged, and I just... Maybe it is the fact that he is a little more on the quiet side, but I can't understand the whistle that Jared Allen gets. I feel bad for him.
Well, I mean, Draymond really set the precedent that if you're smaller, you can just hurt people that are bigger than you. Like, that was such a, like, I'm not even joking. Like the way that defense, and Van Gundy talks about it all the time on air. I think it's one of my favorite talking points he has is that you can't breathe on offensive players when they're driving to the basket. But the second you're a big man in the post, you can just absolutely knock the crap out of them off ball, on ball, doesn't matter. Undercut them, shove them. It's the only place where physicality is like the complete Wild West.
Yeah.
And it drives me freaking crazy.
Yeah.
Because I love, you know, big man play. And I feel like sometimes the league kind of legislates it out of games.
Yeah. And, you know, I was actually going to complain because, I mean, last year it was such a frustration that when Garland would go to the rim, that the amount of contact on him just didn't seem to get called, and it didn't improve after the All-Star break. It is actually kind of refreshing to look at it now changing, right? I don't know if it's the All-Star reputation or whatever the case may be, but his free throw rate is actually up 11% from the previous year, which
is going to make him.
Yeah, making them would be nice for sure. That's one of the things that jumps out from the Minnesota game. But it's nice to see both Mitchell and Garland getting to the line because it's so difficult to account for their speed and their craftiness in the lane. So that is a massive, massive improvement, and it's probably going to be really important to a lot of wins moving forward. How are you feeling about the Bucks game, Carter? I think you got to let the people know that you're going to be letting them down by not podcasting after the Bucks game.
Not only will I not be podcasting after the Bucks game, I won't be watching it live. I'll be on a plane to Seattle for a work trip. So I will have to watch the VOD after I land. So I'm actually thrilled because I feel like watching it live would make me feel a little angsty, given the general angst around the team. Because, you know, I can't stop myself from opening Twitter during games, and just seeing dumb takes would trigger me. So I'm just going to unplug. I'm going to watch you know, some Marvel movie that came out 6 months ago on my American Airlines flight, and have a lovely evening, and then watch the game from my hotel room after I get set up.
Well, safe travels, buddy. We won't be going live because Carter is the one that puts this all on. Again, I appreciate and am in awe of your abilities to produce this live on the fly. So we will have a recorded version of the podcast after the game with host of the Eurostep, Ty Windisch. Really excited to have him back on the podcast. He fills in for you a fair bit, Carter. I think he's starting to take it a little personally that you're never around.
Well, you know, it's not my fault that when you're looking for a me replacement, you find Ty.
Yep, and we know he's going to do a great job. Hopefully he's going to be in a bit of a sad mood. I'm hoping for sadness on Ty's behalf and happiness on ours. Big thanks to everyone tuning in on YouTube. If you want to support us, like, subscribe, click the notification bell so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast and you want to support us, leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of the review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cats.
Growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Are the old world picturesque shores of Europe calling you? Set sail on an adventure with Avalon Waterways. Enjoy an elevated cruising experience. Avalon Waterways offers smaller ships, bigger experiences with fewer people and more of, well, everything good about river cruising. Don't just dream about quaint towns and cobblestone villages. See them for yourself and make lasting memories. Discover limited time offers today at AvalonWaterways.com.